Random House Audio presents Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese. Read for you by Sunil Malhotra. And because I love this life, I know I shall love death as well. The child cries out when from the right breast the mother takes it away, in the very next moment to find in the left one its consolation. Rabindranath Tagore from Gitanjali. Prologue. The Coming. After 8 months spent in the obscurity of our mother's womb, my brother, Shiva, and I came into the world in the late afternoon of the 20th of September in the year of grace 1954. We took our first breaths at an elevation of 8,000 feet in the thin air of Addis Ababa, capital city of Ethiopia. The miracle of our birth took place in Missing Hospitals Operating Theatre 3, the very room where our mother, Sister Mary Joseph Praise, spent most of her working hours and in which she had been most fulfilled. When our mother, a nun of the Diocesan Carmelite Order of Madras, unexpectedly went into labor that September morning, the big rain in Ethiopia had ended, its rattle on the corrugated tin roofs of Missing ceasing abruptly like a chatterbox cut off in mid-sentence. Overnight, in that hushed silence, the mescal flowers bloomed, turning the hillsides of Addis Ababa into gold. In the meadows around Missing, the sedge won its battle over mud, and a brilliant carpet now swept right up to the paved threshold of the hospital, holding forth the promise of something more substantial than cricket, croquet, or shuttlecock. Missing sat on a verdant rise, the irregular cluster of whitewashed one- and two-story buildings looking as if they were pushed up from the ground in the same geologic rumble that created the Entoto Mountains. Trough-like flower beds, fed by the runoff from the roof gutters, surrounded the squat buildings like a moat. Matron Hurst's roses overtook the walls, the crimson blooms framing every window and reaching to the roof. So fertile was that loamy soil that Matron, Missing Hospital's wise and sensible leader, cautioned us against stepping into it barefoot lest we sprout new toes. 5 trails flanked by shoulder-high bushes ran away from the main hospital buildings like spokes of a wheel, leading to 5 thatched-roof bungalows that were all but hidden by copse, by hedgerows, by wild eucalyptus and pine. It was Matron's intent that Missing resemble an arboretum, or a corner of Kensington Gardens where, before she came to Africa, she used to walk as a young nun, or Eden before the fall. Missing was really Mission Hospital, a word that on the Ethiopian tongue came out with a hiss so it sounded like missing. A clerk in the Ministry of Health, who was a fresh high school graduate, had typed out the Missing Hospital on the license, a phonetically correct spelling as far as he was concerned. A reporter for the Ethiopian Herald perpetuated this misspelling. When Matron Hurst had approached the clerk in the ministry to correct this, he pulled out his original typescript.
"See for yourself, madam. Quod erat demonstratum, it is missing," he said, as if he'd proved Pythagoras's theorem, the sun's central position in the solar system, the roundness of the earth, and Missing's precise location at its imagined corner. And so, missing it was.
Not a cry or a groan escaped from Sister Mary Joseph Praise while in the throes of her cataclysmic labor. But just beyond the swinging door in the room adjoining Operating Theatre 3, the oversized autoclave, donated by the Lutheran Church in Zurich, bellowed and wept for my mother while its scalding steam sterilized the surgical instruments and towels that would be used on her. After all, it was in the corner of the autoclave room, right next to that stainless steel behemoth, that my mother kept a sanctuary for herself during the 7 years she spent at Missing before our rude arrival. Her one-piece desk and chair, rescued from a defunct mission school and bearing the gouged frustration of many a pupil, faced the wall. Her white cardigan, which I am told she often slipped over her shoulders when she was between operations, lay over the back of the chair. On the plaster above the desk, my mother had tacked up a calendar print of Bernini's famous sculpture of St. Teresa of Avila. The figure of St. Teresa lies limp, as if in a faint, her lips parted in ecstasy, her eyes unfocused, lids half-closed. On either side of her, a voyeuristic chorus peers down from the prie-dieu. with a faint smile and a body more muscular than befits his youthful face, a boy angel stands over the saintly, voluptuous sister. The fingertips of his left hand lift the edge of the cloth covering her bosom. In his right hand he holds an arrow as delicately as a violinist holds a bow. Why this picture? Why Saint Teresa, mother? As a little boy of 4, I took myself away to this windowless room to study the image. Courage alone could not get me past that heavy door, but my sense that she was there, my obsession to know the nun who was my mother, gave me strength. I sat next to the autoclave, which rumbled and hissed like a waking dragon, as if the hammering of my heart had roused the beast. Gradually, as I sat at my mother's desk, a peace would come over me, a sense of communion with her. I learned later that no one had dared remove her cardigan from where it sat draped on the chair. It was a sacred object. But for a 4-year-old, everything is sacred and ordinary. I pulled that cuticura-scented garment around my shoulders. I rimmed the dried-out inkpot with my nail, tracing a path her fingers had taken. Gazing up at the calendar print, just as she must have while sitting there in that windowless room, I was transfixed by that image. Years later, I learned that Saint Teresa's recurrent vision of the angel was called the transverberation, which the dictionary said was the soul inflamed by the love of God and the heart pierced by divine love. The metaphors of her faith were also the metaphors of medicine. At 4 years of age, I didn't need words like transverberation to feel reverence for that image. Without photographs of her to go by, I couldn't help but imagine that the woman in the picture was my mother, threatened and about to be ravished by the spear-wielding boy angel. "When are you coming, Mama?" I would ask, my small voice echoing off the cold tile. "When are you coming?" I would whisper my answer, "By God!" That was all I had to go by, Dr. Ghosh's declaration the time I'd first wandered in there and he'd come looking for me and had stared at the picture of Saint Teresa over my shoulders. He lifted me in his strong arms and said in that voice of his that was every bit a match for the autoclave, "She is coming, by God!" 46 and 4 years have passed since my birth, and miraculously I have the opportunity to return to that room. I find I am too large for that chair now, and the cardigan sits atop my shoulders like the lace amice of a priest. But chair, cardigan, and calendar print of transverberation are still there. I, Marion Stone, have changed, but little else has. Being in that unaltered room propels a thumbing back through time and memory. The unfading print of Bernini's statue of Saint Teresa, now framed and under glass to preserve what my mother tacked up, seems to demand this. I am forced to render some order to the events of my life, to say it began here, and then because of this, that happened, and this is how the end connects to the beginning. And so, here I am. We come unbidden into this life. And if we are lucky, we find a purpose beyond starvation, misery, and early death, which, lest we forget, is the common lot. I grew up and I found my purpose, and it was to become a physician. My intent wasn't to save the world as much as to heal myself. Few doctors will admit this, certainly not young ones, but subconsciously, in entering the profession, we must believe that ministering to others will heal our woundedness. And it can. But it can also deepen the wound. I chose the specialty of surgery because of Matron, that steady presence during my boyhood and adolescence. "What is the hardest thing you can possibly do?" she said, when I went to her for advice on the darkest day of the first half of my life. I squirmed. How easily Matron probed the gap between ambition and expediency. "Why must I do what is hardest?" "Because, Marion, you are an instrument of God. Don't leave the instrument sitting in its case, my son. Play. Leave no part of your instrument unexplored. Why settle for 3 blind mice when you can play the Gloria?" How unfair of matron to evoke that soaring chorale which always made me feel that I stood with every...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?